Welcome everyone to another episode of the Let's Talk Surgery podcast for RCSED. I am your host, Gregory Cotta, and today we bring you yet another episode in the FST series that focuses on the faculty of surgical trainers. Joined as always by my good friend, Ceci. Ceci, how are you?
I'm fine, Greg. How are you?
Great, thanks. Excited to have our guest on today.
Me too.
Today with us for the audience, we have James Tomlinson, who is a consultant spinal surgeon down in Sheffield, as well as the deputy director of the Faculty of Surgical Trainers and an all-around good guy. James, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for that introduction. That was very flattering.
That's all right. Thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you. You are an integral part of the Faculty of Surgical Trainers. And as you're aware, that the point of the series is to showcase our surgical trainers and hear a bit from those at the forefront of surgical training. So we're pleased to have you here. And we just have a set of quick fire questions. I'm sure you'll cope. Nothing left field coming, so you're fine. Excited and ready?
I am. I feel quite honoured to be here, actually. It's nice to be invited, so thank you.
Excellent. Just before we go through the formal questions, we give you an opportunity to tell our audience who you are. Obviously, I've given a bit of a mouthful about who, well, introduction, but here's your chance. A couple of minutes. Who is James Tomlinson?
Hi, everyone. Who is James Tomlinson? So I'm a spinal surgeon, as you said, down in Sheffield. I'm a Yorkshireman. Born and bred, so I haven't really ended up going that far. I did go away for a while and worked elsewhere and then came back. Heavily involved in surgical training, as you've mentioned, and my subspecialty is spine, and also have an interest in patient safety and human factors and non-technical skills as well when I'm not surgical training or doing spinal surgery.
And you're also pretty, well, you're interested in medical leadership and healthcare leadership, is that correct?
Yes. Oh, someone's done their homework. Yeah, I... Wow.
<All right.
laughs> I feel like you guys know more about me than I know about myself. No, yeah, I am. I actually was part of a... Yorkshire has a leadership scheme similar to the national scheme where you can go out of programme, and I was part of that, and now supervise two leadership fellows as well, both of whom are out of programme developing their leadership skills.
Excellent. And as an ex-leadership fellow myself, I tip my hats off to you for what you do. So well done. Right. We'll move into the meat of this episode. So question number one, James, who is or was your best trainer and why?
Now I'm going to, am I allowed more than one? Am I only allowed one?
Sure, just because it's you, you can have two.
I've spent days being troubled by this about whether I have to pick one or not. I'm going to pick two then. I think from the world of spinal surgery, one of my colleagues who's probably sat the other side of this wall, so probably listening in, a colleague of mine, Ashley Cole, who when I was a registrar and fairly early on in my registrar training, took a real interest in my development. I was lucky that I did spine at a time when we didn't have a senior fellow. And so, in effect, there was something in it for both of us that he was very much, if I teach you how to do more than I normally let a registrar do, that helps me because there's no one else other than you and me. And hopefully it helps you because you're going to find this a lot more interesting. And took a real interest in me and let me do a lot. And then also stayed in touch through my training and kind of took a lot of opportunities where he could to help me develop and open a lot of doors for me. So very grateful for that. The other person I'm going to pick, which is a little bit off piste, is actually Susie Sterling, who's a training program director for public health, but actually heads up the Yorkshire Leadership Fellow program. And I have to thank Susie because when I went out of program, I was a little bit disgruntled with training for a variety of reasons, and I credit her with completely reinventing me as a clinician and as a surgeon and completely reigniting my enthusiasm for my career, and I'm very grateful for that.
Excellent. Susan, if you're listening, the world of spinal surgery owes you a debt. Thank you for giving him his vigor back. We had a recent leadership fellowship reunion up here in Scotland, and a number of fellows actually said that one of the reasons why they went out of program was, you know, a bit disillusioned, and that year out looking at leadership and how to shape the environment you work in helped them find their feet again. So I can certainly echo some of those sentiments. Question number two. Now, you yourself, you are, as the Deputy Director of the Faculty of Surgical Trainers, you are heavily involved in training and a number of other hats that you wear. What is it about training the next generation that you enjoy?
I think just watching people develop, it's an enormous privilege. It's just fascinating watching people develop. I think training can be challenging, thinking about some of my own experiences in training. There were times when it was not how I wanted it to be, and I was very keen to get involved with things as early as I could, and I think it's great to have the chance to try and influence and change things and make them how you think they ought to be. It's just incredibly rewarding, and I think the more you put into training other people, often the more you get back 10 times what you invest in most trainees. And actually, why do we all do this? Because we want to make patients better. And I like operating, but ultimately I can only operate on one person at once. Whereas if I train hundreds of people and send them out into the world, they can operate on hundreds of people a week and really have an impact on how we deliver healthcare.
Excellently put. I'm going to put you on the spot, James. You weren't expecting this, but in the last 5 years,
we focused on my bandwidth all of a sudden. Hang on, I might get cut off here.
Fine, we can dial back in. In the last 5 years, you don't have to answer this, but can you think of one trainee that has been your best trainee? It's like asking you to pick your favorite child, so feel free not to. You love them all equally, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think different people see different things. I think actually for me, always the thing is people fulfilling their potential and being the best version of them that they can be. And there are some people who are world beaters who will go on and be incredibly high profile and nationally, internationally famous. Yep. There are also other people who, and I mean this very kindly, will be good at what they do, never be spectacular, but just do some solid things in solid ways and make patients better. And actually, I think they're just as important. It's just as satisfying. Actually, it's about unlocking each person's potential and giving them the opportunities that they can develop in ways they want to develop.
You must be a father of multiple because you've answered that very well without picking your favorite child. Excellent, James.
I was about to say that was extremely expertly done. The diplomacy there was exemplary. It's almost making me want to quit pediatric surgery and do spines just to have the opportunity to be trained by you, but just almost. Anyway, I get a bit of the fun bit now. I am a huge lover of music, so I'd be interested to know if you play music in theatre, and if you do, what do you play?
Yeah, I don't play my own music, but I don't mind. I know music in theatre is a really controversial topic. I think some quietish music is often quite helpful. That actually, anecdotally, I think sometimes if you don't have music in theatre, the background noise is actually louder than when you have some music. I must say, I'm going to mention someone in particular. We had an ODP, John, who's now retired. He used to work with our spine team, who was fantastic, because he had an iPod with about 80,000 songs on. And as he always called it, it was the iPod with something for everyone. But it was just a huge, huge range of music with thousands and thousands of albums. And it worked really well because there literally was something for it. And I think that's the key in theatre is actually, I would argue, it's about the music that everyone in the room wants, not the music that the surgeon wants. So I think it's finding that balance. Ideally, something not too loud, not too fast. I know there's an anaesthetist in Leeds where I did my fellowship who will remain nameless, who, when he's getting a bit bored and the surgery's taking too long, has a Brazilian samba beat CD he loves to play that gets faster and faster and faster with each track.
Wow.
So I'd encourage the surgeons to get a move on. But I think it's finding that balance, isn't it, of something that's not too intrusive, not too alienating as well in terms of, you know, keeping everyone on board.
Fantastic. I don't think such a track exists because there will always be somebody who has opinions about the musical selection. But I'm really surprised by your choices of something a bit more quiet, because in my mind, all orthopedic surgeons blare out AC/DC or Guns N' Roses at the top volume while they hammer, hammer, hammer and saw, saw, saw. So I'm really impressed with that. Okay, on to...
It shows the last time she was in an orthopedic theatre, doesn't it?
Greg.
It's good to know that these images live on in the world.
So, next question. If you were on a desert island, just you and you alone, and you could only take one surgery or profession-specific tool with you, one thing you just cannot live without, what would that be?
Ooh. Well, I suppose with my spinal surgery hat on, what do I actually get most use from? An operating microscope. That's a huge part of our practice. And actually there's not that much surgery these days that we do without the microscope, unless we're fixing fractures or something. Without spinal surgery hat on, actually, I suppose one of the most, if you were going to get specific about what's the most useful thing you could have, arguably a splint. Thomas Splint is a great example of actually that is a literally saved lives, a very simple intervention that literally stopped people dying from blood loss from femoral fractures in the First World War. And it's very simple, it's very accessible, it's very cheap. If you're clever, you can probably splint most long bone fractures with it, with a bit of adaptability, and it'd be useful to have if you're on a desert island.
Fantastic. So something uber modern like a microscope, and then something uber retro like a Thomas Splint.
Oh, yeah, something absolutely. For everyone.
Indeed.
It also gives us an insight into what you plan to do on this desert island, because you're clearly getting something for long bone fractures, so you're not going to be sitting reading a book, are you? Good to know. So next is more about you as a person, or also as a profession, actually. What one book, medical or non-medical, have you enjoyed the most, either recently or in the past?
Ooh. slight fudge, but staying away from medical books in the purest sense, I think Atul Gawande's work is a really good read.
You're in good company.
I think all of his Checklist Manifesto was the first book of his that I read, and I thought there's some really interesting insights into medical culture there, the barriers he came up against when he tried to introduce things, even things that clearly had an impact on safety, the resistance that was met with. And I think being realistic about it, Atul Gawande is a lot more persuasive than I am, or most people are in our profession. And if he's struggling, it really highlights, actually, there's a huge issue. And I think some of his other books, another one I always tell people about when I'm talking about management of metastatic disease, I think Being Mortal is a really good book. And I think the way he explores death and how we deal with that and how we think about that and about quality of life as well as length of life is really important. And I think that we can all learn a lot from his writing. Non-medical books. Ooh, I might sound like a bit of a nerd here, but I've really enjoyed reading a lot of the leadership books, actually, around, because I think actually a lot of them actually around human behaviour, aren't they? And actually, human behaviour is kind of interesting in itself, but it's also a huge part of what we do as clinicians. If I were to pick one book, actually, that I think probably really changed the way I think about it, there's a great book by Matthew Saeed called Bounce, which is an exploration of kind of theory around learning and motorsports and technical skills and all sorts of other things. And I found that a real eye-opener. And I think he takes people through some quite difficult concepts in parts, but some really good grounded literature, but in a very accessible way as well, and also draw some really nice parallels as well with everyday life. What everyone listening to this can't see is the two people nodding their heads who clearly also love reading Atul Gawande and Matthew Saeed's books.
Absolutely. I've read everything Atul Gawande has ever published, even some random articles. And my personal favourite is actually Complications. And I got introduced to that book by an excellent trainer of mine in the past after we had had quite a difficult case. And it, as you say, James, it's so humbling to see someone at the top of his game speak so openly and honestly about when things go wrong. And another person I've been enjoying reading a lot is Matthew Saeed. I finished Black Box Thinking and Bounce recently. So again, absolutely loving everything that you've picked. I'm just so happy right now. So happy.
I don't think we've had a guest come on any of our podcasts that has been so in tune with our thinking in terms of, you know, if I was to get the two of us to list the three books that we would want to read or our favorite books, certainly mine is Complications of All Time. And Being Mortal is another book that I absolutely adore. It's a book I read around the same time as meeting a patient who had, you know, metastatic colorectal cancer, unexpectedly died within a few days, and reading the book and going through this just, you know, put life in perspective for me. And Complications, again, that was a book that I read around sort of the start of surgical training, and that just inspired me to keep going. Read Better, and again, you know, everything Atul Gawande does, all for it. So you're certainly in good company. And yes, the audience can't see Ceci and I going crazy in the background and enjoying this. So yes, glad to have you around. Last one from me. I think you will have a good answer to this, and I'm looking forward to what you're going to say. Everyone that listens to this podcast knows that I struggle with my work-life balance. I am work, 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 very little life balance. So what is it you do to keep a balanced work-life relationship?
Yeah, I think it depends who you ask. So if you want to ever get my wife on this podcast and ask her, she will tell you I don't, and then probably stop talking at that point. But no, I think it is a challenge. I agree. I think surgery can be quite all-consuming, and particularly as a consultant, I think sometimes it's hard to walk away from things and forget about things when you leave the door. I think it is challenging. Do I always get it right? No, I definitely don't. I'm very clear about that. I think sometimes I get the balance wrong in favour of doing too much. I suppose if you are prone to doing that, the next best thing you can do is know when that's happening and know when you're getting a little bit frazzled and know when it's time to say, I need some downtime and I need to just find a way of clearing my head and walking away. I try and cycle when I can. I find that very helpful. I think the one thing I'm really bad at is I find it really hard to disengage brain. So even if I sit down, I just find something to read and find another thing to think about. And actually, if you're kind of riding your bike, it's quite all consuming. You just have to concentrate on what you're doing. Otherwise, you're going over the bars and you're on your own trauma list. And so it's a good way of just forgetting about the world for a while. We've also had a baby boy, quite. I've got a 6-month-old boy, and actually, I find that we walk miles and miles and miles with me and the little one, and I find that's a really great way to just get away from things. And he acts as a really welcome distraction, and a smile from him makes the world's worries all seem a little bit better each day.
I'm smiling pretty freely because, and I know you didn't mean this, but my new baby is a welcome distraction. I know you meant he's the all-consuming aspect of your life, but we know what you meant. Thank you very much. I will not take the baby advice. I will go cycling instead. But
yes, it's a bit of a drastic solution for anyone with a balance issue.
Agreed. I mean, I don't have any children yet, but my sister has a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and I'm not quite sure how she does it. So, yeah. Welcome distraction or absolute career suicide or insanity. I don't know. Either way, children are a blessing. Right. Coming to the last question, you've had so many experiences in your training career and as a consultant. Is there one pearl of wisdom, like the best bit of advice you can give to a trainee out there, just based on your professional experiences so far?
This feels like quite a high pressure moment now. I'm feeling like I've got to nail this one.
I feel I should play the countdown music.
Will do.
I suddenly feel the lights dimming and a bright light shining on me. No, I think reflecting on my own experience and advice I've been given from a variety of sources and even people outside medicine who I've met, I think probably the fundamental underpinning of everything is know yourself, know who you are, and try and be who you are. And you need to find a professional avenue that allows you to be who you are and be yourself, because you can't be someone you're not to try and fit in. And no matter how interesting the work is, if you feel like you have to adopt a different persona to fit in your professional world, that will eventually one day prove your undoing. And I think that's the key, is just kind of know who you are and what makes your world go round, and find avenues and outlets that allow you to be that person. And that may be that you have a kind of second avenue to your career as well as being a surgeon, but that's really important. And I think that's the underpinning of everything, really. And also, I think something we don't do well in surgery that we don't encourage is, with trainees, is also know when to say, you know what, maybe I'm in the wrong place and maybe this isn't for me. And there should be no shame in that, but I think we don't deal with that well, that it isn't for everyone. There are people who are perfectly capable, bright enough, technically adequate enough, who probably just don't want to do the job. And we need to find ways of removing the stigma from that.
Those words.
Amazing. Such sage words of advice. They are. And it echoes one personal phrase I try and tell myself intermittently: to thine own self be true, which to those of you classically trained out there and a bit nerdy like me, comes from the play Hamlet. And I think it's so important to not lose yourself to the game. And I know we're recording this, so I can't even deny that I said it. And I know Greg will keep bringing it up. You are one of the first people I've spoken to in another specialty that makes me want to quit ped surgery and come and work for you.
Yes.
What an inspiring man. Thank you so much for coming on. We're truly honoured.
Well, no, honestly, it's a real privilege to come and chat. And it's always nice to chat to like-minded people and share ideas. So thanks for the invite. I really enjoyed it.
Indeed.
You're always welcome on a future episode of the podcast, where you can have a feature length hour long episode. We can talk all things from leadership to surgery to just life in general and distractions of children. James, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks both. Thank you.
It has. Right, guys, until next time, stay safe and be kind to each other. Bye, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.